from time to time I'm asked, how did you ever get into the ministry? And usually my answer is, I don't know. I don't know. It just sort of happened that way. And as Brother Danny was just testifying, what you do is you do your best wherever you are, wherever you're serving the Lord, and whatever capacity he's using you. If it's to be a groundsman, be the best groundsman you can be. If it's to be an Aaron, how old are you? Be the best 8-year-old you can be for Jesus. Live for Jesus as an 8-year-old, as a 10-year-old, as a 16-year-old. And I could readily identify with what Danny said. I can't put it the way that he put it, but I wish I had been more consistent, more diligent. What else did you want to be? Fully yielded and dedicated and given. I think that probably every one of us would say that. Wish I could do it over again. I would have tried to do better and been more diligent or more given and yielded. But to whatever extent we've been able to give him our best and yield to him our lives, it's really, when you look back over it, Jesus led me all the way. Led me step by step each day. And as the song says, one day when we get to the end of the road and we lay our burdens down, what are we going to say? Jesus led me all the way. I've never been sorry I yielded my all. I've never been sorry I heeded his call. My walk with the Master grows sweeter each day. I've never been sorry one step of the way. When I was young, like Nathan, like a lot of people's aspirations as young boys, and yours probably is about the same. I'm sorry, not Nathan, Aaron. Where's Nathan anyway? You too. Boy, you know, well, you grew up too fast. But anyway, I remember when I was their age, whoever they are, and when I was their age, I wanted to be a baseball player or a basketball player. Do you want to be a basketball player when you grow up? You do? I would suggest you try, you know, apply, go for it. But don't put all your marbles in that basket. Very few of us make it big time. And I didn't make it big time. And I realized pretty soon on, you know, I wasn't going to make this big time. And so I started Plan B. If you can't, you know, you can't do it professionally, the next best thing to do is be a gym teacher. And so that's what I thought. That's it. That's it. I remember Brother Gardner. How many of you remember Brother Gardner? You remember him? If you don't know who he is, you can look at his picture in there. And he came to me one time. I was here on staff. And I actually had gone down to the city to play baseball with Kenny Ott. We were on a team. And I guess there were short staff members. Maybe they were at that desperation stage about this time. And I was here serving for whatever, my two-week period. I might have been in the boathouse that year. I had that job. That's a good job and a bad job. You got to spend all afternoon. Heidi, you know all about this already. It's got its perks. You got the ice cream right in front of you. That's a perk. But it's got some drawbacks, too, when you eat too much of that ice cream. But anyway, there I was, and it came time near the end of my stay here at camp, and Brother Gordon came to. He was able to change your mind in a hurry, because he would just kind of tell you what you were supposed to do. I won't even try. Why don't you come back? Why don't you come to camp or stay on at camp? Well, I thought I had a good excuse, like Moses thought he had some good excuses. I said, but Brother Gordon, you know, we play on this, it was a church team, and the playoffs were coming up, and he was big on, you know, if you make a commitment, you keep your commitments. I figured I'm going to use this on him now and see how he likes it for a change. And so I told him, yeah, we got a commitment. I have to be there. That Saturday night, there's a game, and we have to be at that game, and so I have to go back. Well, okay, you can go back and come back the next day. Or Monday, or whatever it was. Well, all right, so we'll do that. And then before we left, and he actually paid our bus fare, Kenny and I, to go back down to the city. We played the game. I don't know whether we won or lost. It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. don't believe that either. It's whether you win or lose. But we came back up to camp, and right before I left, though, getting ready, he drove us to Chestertown, I guess it was, or wherever we got the bus. He grabbed me. Did he ever grab any of you? And yeah, you know what this is all about. You can identify with this. Have you ever thought of the ministry? And he was pulling on my shirt like, you know, get your hands off of my shirt. Have you ever thought of the ministry? And I thought, you know, I mean, not really, but yes. I mean, half of my uncles or three quarters of them were all ministers. And I had heard this, you know, before. Have you ever thought of them? And I loved the Lord. But I really hadn't thought of the ministry. I had thought of gym teacher, playing basketball with the kids, just enjoying life instead of doing this. And so I thought, well, I mean, I never thought of it. But then I went back, came, and here I was, 16, 17, 18, I don't know what I was, on staff. And I thank God for those times. I broke the rules once in a while. One time we ate the next night's supper. All the kitchen guys, we had some good hefty sandwiches after a meeting one night. And we were out on Watch Rock with those good hefty sandwiches, a couple half gallons of milk, and a big thing of ice cream, those three colors ice creams wrapped up. We had a whole box of them, about a dozen of them between three of us. And we were gonna do well that night, and we were doing well until all of a sudden we heard footsteps coming out to Watch Rock. And a flashlight that had three people holding the back of it. That was Brother Gordon. Well. Well, it wasn't so well. He didn't ask me then if I had still been thinking about the ministry. He was thinking some other things at the time. But, you know, as time went on. Not just at camp. It's not just at camp. It's, you know, when you're at home. I never sang in the choir at home. I went to Ridgewood. I never sang in the choir. I couldn't sing. I still can't sing. So I didn't want to sing in the choir. I played my instrument. That was my thing. I play an instrument. Leave me alone as far as the choir is concerned. Until Peter Schaefer and Billy Knaup, they could sing. So I just kind of stood next to them and let them do all the work. And I just did whatever I could do. And then I started to get into it a little bit more. And I never was a good singer, but at least I gave it a shot. And when I worked up here in the pots, I gave it my best shot. And I started here and there, wherever it was. And then I went to work. After I graduated from school, I still fully intended to become a gym teacher one day. But I took a double major, and so I graduated, not because I was, you know, on the short end of the stick, but I graduated 6 months later to get this dual major, and I graduated in January. There are no teaching jobs in January to be had. I had to wait till the next year in September. And so Jesus led me all the way. I mean, some of you know Willie Knaup, Bill, we called him at work, and Sister Susan Wallvogel. She worked at this insurance company. And I just got married. I got married in January. I graduated in January, got married in January. I mean, you know, that was crazy. I had no job. I don't know why my wife's parents allowed her to marry me. No job, no this, no that. And he wants to be a gym teacher when he grows up, of all things. But somehow or other, she said yes, and they gave their consent. And she had been working as a nurse and so for 6 months already. So, you know, we already had plenty of money in the bank with her six-month salary. When we were ready to do this. And so I worked at this insurance company. So there's an opening in this company. Really, okay, I'll go for that. And so I going to church Mondays, helping out with the prayer meeting, the boys. I'm not going to be a minister. I'm willing to help out, though. I'll teach Sunday school. I did that, too. And I'll sing in the choir reluctantly, and I'll play my trumpet in the front row. And whatever else I can do, I'll do whatever I can do. And I guess all the while in the back of my mind, I could get away from, have you ever considered? No. Quiet, Lord. Stop speaking. And I thought I was doing enough. And maybe I was. But then there came a time in Ridgewood one Friday night, I believe it was. Brother Gardner and Brother Edwin were both in that meeting. And I was sitting there. This was shortly before I was to get married. So I didn't sit with the trumpets and play my horn. I sat with my wife or my future wife, because it was a week or so away or just a short time before. And in that meeting, I don't remember all who said what, but there came a time when Brother Gardner got up and he said, "Now, anybody here in this meeting that feels the call of God to the ministry, I want you to come to this altar." Well, I just sat in my seat because I didn't feel any call of anybody to any place. I was already Sunday school and so on, and that was enough. And I remember some of my friends who are today in the ministry. They went to the front and they were, and then lo and behold, talk about being put on the spot. All of a sudden, there's that voice. I didn't get one of these, but that same voice. "Ernie and Joyce, you belong here." Where's here? Right there in the front at the altar with their... Oh, boy, this guy's relentless. I mean, it wasn't him. It was the Lord. And I went to that altar there that evening. And the furthest thing from my mind, but... here came Brother Gordon and Brother Edwin, and as they're praying for me, all of a sudden the Lord fills me with His Spirit. I said, "Was ist das? Now what's going on here? I don't know what's happening." Well, I still did not know. I didn't want to be a minister. I was shy. I had trouble speaking in public. Somebody, Sister Mary McLaughlin, just saw me a few months ago, and she said, "I remember when you first started in Ridgewood on Wednesday mornings, and every time you got up behind the pulpit, you turned beet red." Thank you. I love you too, Sister Mary. And,
I'm
not that kind. I'm basically, I still am, I think. I rather sit in the background. I really would. I didn't ask for this, and I don't really necessarily want it. So if anybody here wants this, you could have it. But then one Friday night, a year or so later after that, no, maybe it was 2 years, more like 2 years, I went to Brother Edwin after the meeting. I said, "Uncle Edwin, I don't know really what I'm supposed to be doing. I want to do what the Lord wants me to do, but I don't really know what that is." And he said to me, and if you know Brother Redwin, you know he's not like this at all. He doesn't push you. He's not like Brother Gordon. Brother Redwin is kind of, well, you find out what the Lord wants from you, and then you do what the Lord wants. Brother Gordon will tell you what the Lord wants from you, and then you do it. But Brother Edwin, he wasn't like that at all. And I asked him, I said, "Uncle Edwin, you know, I really wanted to ask him just to pray because I wanted to know what the Lord wanted from me." And I had been working in this insurance company now a couple of years, and I really loved it. I would have stayed there all my life. I mean, company car, my own hours. I worked half a day, and I got paid like a full day. It was great. I didn't want anything different. It was interesting and exciting. I could tell you a lot of good stories about claims and claims adjusting, and I really enjoyed myself. I said, "Uncle Evan, just pray for me. I don't know what to do." He looked at me, and he said, "Quit your job and move into the faith home." He had a little bit of Brother Gordon in him after all. And the next thing I knew, I went to my boss at work, Mr. Benedict. I walked into his office and I said, "Mr. Benedict, I'm going to, you know, leave. I'll give you as much time as you need to find a replacement. That shouldn't be too hard to replace me. But however many weeks it takes, it's not that I'm under the gun for anything, but whenever, at least I didn't think I was until maybe Uncle Edwin would have put me under one, but you know, I'll do, you know, stay here a month, two, however long it takes." He said, what is it that you're going to do? Now you explain that. You explain to, you know, my boss. I said, "Well, I'm gonna quit my job, and I'm moving into this thing they call the faith home. And I'm going to be there for a while, and I'm going to help out in a church." And he said, "You got to be crazy." I said, "No, I don't think I'm crazy." He made me an offer that practically doubled my salary, or would have doubled my salary. But I knew by that time there was no turning back. I still didn't know what I was going to do. I still didn't know where I was going to do it. I just knew I was there quitting my job, and I'm going to move into the faith home. I had already bought a house. Joyce and I were living in a house in Woodhaven. Now, what do you do with the house that you live? Well, I rented it out and moved into the faith home, and there we stayed for a time. And they sent me to this church in Ozone Park. You go there. You help out Brother Frank there. Okay. Jesus led me all the way. You know, I had people tell me, don't go there, it's a sinking ship. I mean, this is one of the parishioners from the church. Don't go there, it's a sinking ship, or it's a dying breed, and my own dad said, you know, if you want to, I could try to, if you really want to go into ministry, you could get credentialed by the Assemblies of God, and you know, you don't have to go to Ozone Park necessarily. But now I look back. I have been young and now I am old. And I really can say Jesus led me all the way. Led me step by step each day. And I like Dan, and I don't know how I got on this. I don't think I've ever told this story before. And probably never tell it again, excepting hearing the way the Lord has led this meeting. And you'll never be sorry. Maybe you're sitting here tonight. Maybe you're not so young. Maybe you're old. Maybe, you know, what am I here in this big old world? What does God want me to do? Just let him lead you. And if Brother Tom goes over to you and pulls you on your lapels and have you ever thought of the ministry, then think of it. Lord, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to be? Where do you want me to go? How can I serve you? You've given your life for me. Broken pieces, ruined lives are why you died on Calvary. And I'm convinced that the Lord isn't looking for giftedness, talent, ability. I think he more looks for availability. Laborers in the harvest field. People that are willing just to do whatever they can to serve him. And then he leads. Brother John, as most of you know, came to America as an orphan, brought over by Brother Hans after the war. Right? I got that right? What do you do? Somebody who knew that story said to me this afternoon, isn't that the way God works? He takes people that ordinarily would be thrown off to the side, put in some place, let somebody else fend for them. But the Lord takes people like that, like a bunch of disciples, like he picked up fishermen and tax collectors and just ordinary people who are just doing whatever they can do that their hand finds. If it's Moses working on the backside of a desert, or if it's Gideon threshing wheat in the wine press, it's somebody who's busy, who's occupying, who's doing whatever, and, well, maybe we can use you. Maybe you can be a worker. And he takes the common and the ordinary. Not that he makes them anything special, but I think he just likes to show off a little bit in what he can do with nothing. That he can be glorified with nothing. And that's the way God, at least that's the way he's worked in me. And I'm still nothing. And I don't aspire to be anything but nothing. Because I think that the greatest way to do God's will is to recognize that without him, we can do nothing. And we are never called to be anything but to be nothing. Just to be clay in the potter's hands, ready to do what his word commands, only to be what he wants me to be every moment of every day. The Lord needs engineers. The Lord needs school teachers. The Lord needs bakers and butlers. I don't know if he needs Indian chiefs. But the Lord needs all kinds of people in society. And so if you're not called into a full-time service, well, I don't feel as if that's second class. It's not. Every place that he calls us and places us is full-time service. Some of you are in the full-time ministry disguised as a bank teller, perhaps, or a school teacher. But wherever he wants you to be, if you go back a number of years, you remember Hi-B-A? Does that ring a bell? Again, all these old people are raising their what? Am I getting old or what? High school born againers, High BA. It was a Christian high school organization. And the man that founded that organization, he was trained to be a teacher, but he never wanted to be a teacher. He wanted to be a preacher. He wanted to be a servant, a missionary, someplace. And so he went to some mission field. I don't know what country he went to. And after a couple of years, he was just an abject failure, at least he thought he was. There was no fruit from his ministry. He wasn't finding any success. He just every door was closing for him. And so after a couple of years, he came back to the States and he took a job as a school teacher. And not too long after being a school teacher for a number of years, they promoted him and he became the principal. We have a principal in our church, used to be a principal. He didn't think it was a promotion. It was kind of like, uh-oh, now he was way over his head, not academically or whatever, but just all the problems that came his way. He's now back being a regular school teacher. He likes that a lot better. But this man became a teacher, then a principal of a school. And he was sitting in his office one day, and that word came to him from Joshua, every place that the sole of your feet will tread upon, that's yours. You know what the guy did? He got up from his office at school, and he literally walked around the whole perimeter of the school, the whole block. And he said, this is my mission field. This school, this public school, is my mission field. And I claim this place and the people, the kids that come to this school for the Lord. I want souls to be saved here. It's not Africa. It's not India. It's just right here where I teach school or I'm the principal of this school. And he claimed that for the Lord. And after some time went on, he began this organization in his school. Anybody that wants to come at 3 o'clock can come and join me and we're going to have a Bible study. You could do that in the school in those days. Maybe you still can, I don't know. But he did that and invited kids, and kids came. And then it grew to another school and another school. I think it became a national organization. I don't think it was just a New York City thing. But it grew and expanded, and that was the work that God had called him to do. So, you know, wherever it is that he puts you, shine just where you are. Send forth the light into the night. Shine for the Lord where you are, and let him use you in the way that he wants to. But while you're young, and I guess Brother Dan started talking to you young people, give of the strength of your youth. Give of the strength of your youth. Look, you're going to get old one day, whether you like it or not. You're going to get old, right, Brother John?
Everybody except me.
We're going to get old one day, even him. He just doesn't admit it. But it's true, believe me. And you don't have the strength you used to have. I wish I had some of my strength back that I did when I was, you know, 30 and those years earlier. But Lord, whatever strength we have, I want to give it to you. Whatever I can do for you, be it at camp or at home or wherever, Lord, I want my life. I'll close with this. At my Uncle Walter, I think it was, my Uncle Walter's funeral, they asked all his brothers, and there were still a lot of them living at the time, to sing a song. And I remember my Uncle Milton, I was sitting next to him or around him, I don't know why, but I guess because I'm part of the family. And I was sitting by Uncle Milton, and when he was getting up to go sing this song that they were called upon to sing, he said to his brother, Gordon, I don't know this song. And I remember Uncle Gordon said, just sing high. So I don't know what that means. Just sing high. So they went up there to sing, and I had never heard the song before, and I don't think I could sing more than just one or two lines. But those couple of lines at a funeral service spoke to my heart, and they went like this. I want my life to count for Jesus. I want my life to count for Jesus. I want my life to tell for Jesus. I want my life to tell for Jesus. You want your life to tell for Jesus. So give your life altogether to him and live for him who died for you. You'll never, ever be sorry. Take it from some old people. You know, old people sometimes do, believe it or not, they sometimes do know things. And when my Uncle Edwin, the day before he passed away, or 2 days before he passed away, I went to see him in the hospital. Last thing he said to me, "Ernst, Jesus is wonderful. Jesus is wonderful." You know that, don't you, Ernie? Jesus is wonderful. Just serve him. Just serve him. Jesus is wonderful. And I think he was right. He was 93, was it? Four? Two? He was old. And he was quite sick. But Jesus is wonderful. Serve him. You know that, though, don't you? So let's let our lives count for him. Thank you, Lord. Oh, Jesus, for mercy so great,
what return can I make? For mercy so constant and
I'm never gonna learn that more.
Praise up, oh God. Help,
praise.
Dear Lord.